Hello, I'm Bob Wall. I'm here in the KGVM studios with Deputy Mayor Cunningham, and we're here to talk about the ballot issues that you are going to find on your ballot that should be in the mail. I didn't check this morning whether we've gotten ours, but I think it must be really close if we haven't. So if you're in the city of Bozeman, there will be the county bond issue that we talked to Commissioner Brown about, and then three city ballot issues will be on your ballot if you are in the city of Bozeman. So I think we're going to maybe discuss what those are about and get some information about those for voters. So I thought maybe we would start with the renovation bond issue.
You bet. And thanks for having me, Bob. As mentioned, I am Terry Cunningham, Deputy Mayor of Bozeman. And so we have two bond questions and one mill levy question. A little bit of difference between what a bond and a mill levy is. Bonds are generally for those things that are capital needs, and you build it or you fix it, and then you pay it off over a period of time. And a community levy is more for an ongoing community need. So directly to your question, we have three facilities. They're all recreational facilities that are in need of renovation. And so the bond question will say, do you approve of $2.2 million going to the renovation of three different facilities? One is the Lindley Center. The city purchased that, believe it or not, from the Elks Club back in the 1960s. That was actually the clubhouse for a golf course that was on that property. It has been much used over the years and has fallen into a situation where it's no longer ADA compliant. Anyone who has been to an event there or hosted an event there knows that the bathrooms, the kitchen, et cetera, are less than serviceable. And so we are going to be spending funds, if it passes, to renovate inside and out that building, as well as to handle the parking lot. So that's project number one. Project number two is the Bogert Pool. Probably no one listening, some may have been born back in the 1930s when the ribbon cutting for the Bogert Pool was first made. But over the years, we have had to make periodic capital improvements to that in order to make sure that it doesn't fall into such disrepair that it's no longer useful. So we're redoing the entire shell, the shell that holds in the water there, and we're putting in a fence as well and other upgrades to make sure that that Bogert Pool continues its usable life. And the third is the Bozeman Swim Center. And so that's right next to the high school. Our deal with the school district is that they gave us the land on which to build that, and we maintain and we operate that facility. And so there's a number of issues. We have to redo the HVAC system because we are having to close it on occasion because of poor air quality. The gutters and the tiles are in disrepair. And again, much like an oil change that has to be done on a periodic basis, although no one at home is likely spending $2.2 million on their oil change, these have to be done. One of the questions we get, Bob, is this part of the Parks and Trails Maintenance District that we passed as a community a year or two ago? And the answer is that while we are going to be making some improvements on trails, parks and other things to recreational facilities, that these large capital items were never anticipated to be part of that ongoing trails district that we approved.
Okay. So I was trying to remember, I know there's been discussion about the swim center at different times throughout the past quite a few years, and some work was done at Bogert Pool 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah. Actually, a citizens group led a lot of that effort, and the city ponied up some funds as well. It really was to improve the locker rooms. It was to improve the public perception. There was a lot of paint that went on, and so some interior renovations. This is going to be to the pool facility, the actual pool itself, to make sure that it's not leaking, to completely replace that shell that holds in the water, to make sure that we're not getting overnight visitors unauthorized through the fence, and to do some other makeovers that are really to the pool itself rather than to the lifeguard area or the public facility and changing room.
Okay. I've certainly spent a number of nights in the Lindley Center at events and stuff. I imagine a lot of people around Bozeman have. So just to kind of put things in context, if these repairs continue to be deferred, I imagine there's some sort of point of no return. And I don't know, maybe maybe for the Lindley Center, maybe it's a little farther out. But I wonder if you've got any kind of an idea of really how immediate the need is for the repairs at the swim center and the pool.
Yeah. And so we, as mentioned, the air circulation in there where you have chlorine and you have other items, we have had to close pool on occasion. And you're absolutely right. There, at a certain point, systems start to fail and you know, it becomes more acute. The NEAT is acute. We're not at failure yet, to be honest with you, and we're trying to avoid having to go to that level. We do need a new HVAC system. Once the pool decking and tiling starts to crumble and chip, then you're getting the possibility of injuries and so on and so forth. So, is it, without this, would we have to close the doors immediately? Absolutely not, Bob. But this is, we think, a timely and necessary upgrade.
And as I talked to Commissioner Brown about the bond for the courts building, and as I understand it, these bonds, there's an estimate for the amount that it will cost in the first year to fund that $2.2 million, and that gets spread out over basically all the taxable property in the city limits. Is that the
case? That's true. So absolutely right. Those who own property in the city limits will be required to pay back the bond. At this point, the estimate based on the median taxable value, not what you could sell your home for on Zillow, is roughly $6 and change in terms of a yearly payment. The good thing about bonds is as we grow as a community, there are more property owners, and therefore the cost is spread out among more people. So the most expensive year for a bond is always year one, and that cost goes down as the community population increases.
Assuming we're going to continue to increase in population, which, if I were a gambling man, would be a pretty safe bet for Bozeman.
Yeah, will we continue to grow at the same rate? I don't know. But, growth has generally been in our future. And if you look at past issues of Daily Chronicle going back to the 1970s, there's front page stories about the amount of growth in Bozeman. So, yeah, you're right. I'd take that.
I think that would be a pretty safe bet. Okay. So the next issue is for the relocation of fire station number 2. Is that correct?
That's correct. So fire station number 2 is on 19th, and it is just south of Main Street. It was built in 1974. When it was built, it was considered the western edge of town. There was nothing of terrible significance further to the west, at least in the city limits. It was also built for a part-time fire department, and it was almost exclusively male at that time. Fast forward, that is no longer the western edge of town. There are, some issues with getting in and getting out of that station. We now have full-time paid firefighters who are on 48 hours off 96 hours. That's their schedule. And so they live in those facilities. And we also have a broader mix in terms of gender. We have active female firefighters. And so the facility, just for instance, sleeping quarters, were never segregated, never divided, etc. Our restrooms, there's only one restroom. And if a woman goes in there, the restroom is closed for showering and anything else. And so that's part of the reason for upgrading. Number two is they're so cramped in there that the workbench for fixing a chainsaw is right next to the laundry area, which is next to the kitchen, et cetera. And we also cannot fit a ladder truck into that facility. That is the station, station number 2, where we would like to have our ladder truck because the tallest buildings in Bozeman tend to be on the MSU campus. So that's the issue we're trying to solve. The great news is that we have a partnership with Montana State University where they've identified a parcel of land, and we have agreed in theory on a land lease, and it would be right next to the MSU Police Department at Kagi and 7th. Now, you may know that Kagi, there's plans for expansion there. It'll be a roundabout in that area as well, and plans will be made to make sure that our fire equipment has priority at those roundabouts and can change signals and do a bunch of other things. So the goal is to move it further south because that's where the bulk of development is happening in that section of town, is happening near the MSU and south of the MSU campus and to the west. And the big goal is to keep our fire response rates as close to the desired level, which is 6 minutes from the moment you pick up the phone, call 911, say, I have a fire or a medical emergency. And keep in mind that the majority of calls that our fire department goes on are actually medical emergencies as well. So every second counts. Every minute, a fire doubles in size, et cetera. Currently, we're at about 8 minutes, and we believe that this redeployment will help us get closer to that six-minute time frame.
If I recall correctly, if people are wondering about needing a new facility versus maybe expanding the existing facility, that obviously wouldn't address any of the concerns about being able to get onto 19th from the fire station, which I imagine at certain times of day is tricky. But I don't remember, it doesn't seem like there's really room for expansion on the current site?
Not in that footprint. That pad, that footprint, doesn't allow for any expansion of the building and maintaining the egress and ingress for fire equipment. And if we were to start all over again and say, where do we need our fire stations, it would be much further to the south, yeah.
Right. I've seen a lot of discussion about the proposal and about the proposed site in particular, and a lot of concern that I see is about KGE and as it exists now, getting into and out of that site on KGE is probably even more difficult than getting onto and off of 19th. So I wonder what sort of plans are in place to mitigate that. I know there's been a lot of discussion about the reconstruction of KGE, so I've seen a lot of stuff, but I'm not up to date on maybe where that's kind of landed.
Yeah. So there is a long-term plan that the city and Montana Department of Transportation have engaged in about renovating KGE from Wilson to 19th. And there is a plan. We are in the design phase of that. It's probably a couple years out, but the current design calls for roundabouts at Wilson 7th and 11th, and a widening of that road as well. And if the voters approve this, we're going to make sure that the design phase, which again is not over, can include the fact that we need to get emergency vehicles through those roundabouts, et cetera. So we will have the ability to have the fire personnel be able to press something and there's, you know, rapid flashing beacons go, et cetera, that a lane is cleared for them. So we absolutely recognize the nature of KGE, but the good news is that we're in the design phase and this will be accommodated in the design of KGE of how emergency vehicles get into that roundabout, out of that roundabout, and on their way as quickly as possible.
Do you know if there would be an option, you know, I guess, like I'm familiar with the fire station right behind us on Fire Station 1, would there be an option to potentially go out onto 7th, if depending on where the engine was headed, like go through maybe the parking lot for the police station there? Do you know?
So I don't know the exact design, and quite frankly, we have a rendering. but in terms of egress and ingress, I'm not sure whether or not the primary point will be KGE or 7th. Once you go north on 7th, Grant is closed, and there's some talk of that being closed in a long-term fashion. So pointing the fire equipment down 7th might pose some problems in and of itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of the discussion points I've seen, and I think I've seen a rebuttal to this, but it kind of comes up fairly frequently, is when people think about growth in the Bozeman area, there's certainly a lot of growth to the south, but there's a lot of growth. The perception, I think, including in my part, is that there's more growth to the west. And so what is there something in place that already addresses that? Instead, I've seen the question, well, why wouldn't this fire station be, if it was going to be moved more to the west to service that growth instead of south?
Yeah, so a couple things. One is, we have a pretty good idea of where, you know, future growth is going to come because community development keeps an eye on what's in the pipeline, et cetera. And we are seeing considerable growth west of 19th and it moving, you know, well up past Kagi as well. So, you know, just in my commission experience, that is where a lot of our, you know, annexations and future developments seem to be coming from. But you're absolutely right. The west side continues to be a fast-growing part of Bozeman. We do have a fire facility in fire station number 3, which also is the home of the 911 center. And we believe that that location is really well-suited, particularly now that Vaquero Way goes through, et cetera, that we can cover the west side with that one facility.
Okay. Great. Any other thoughts about the relocation, about this bond?
You know, so it's important to note that we have a fire master plan for where we believe the fire stations will be need to be positioned in the future based on growth projections. And this is aligning with the fire master plan. So it wasn't, hey, you know, we need to move it. Let's see who's got property, and that's where we'll go. This is almost exactly where that fire master plan says we needed to have the facility. So it is you know, part of an overall strategy.
And so the agreement is to lease the land from MSU,
yeah,
a long-term lease?
Yeah, indeed. When Chief Josh Waldo, who's our fire chief, gives a presentation and he shows a rendering, he points out two things. Number one, there's a big Bobcat logo in the front of that fire station. And he said, by golly, that's non-negotiable. And number two, instead of having these big red doors that you see in you know, fire stations, ours will be blue. Ours will be Bobcat blue. It is a really special relationship so that MSU doesn't have to, you know, get to the point where they're developing their own fire resources, that we can serve that for them and serve it in an efficient manner.
Right. Yeah. So this is another bond issue, and this bond is for about three times as much?
It's $6.8 million. You know, that translates into, I believe it's somewhere between $13 and $15 per household. And again, based on that median household value that comes to us from the tax rolls from the county.
Right. Okay. So the last bond issue that will be on the ballot is for an affordable housing levy instead of a bond, correct?
Yeah. So levies are for ongoing community needs. We have a levy for the 911 center. You know, we believe that funding 911 and their operations and their important work is going to be an ongoing community need. We have a parks maintenance district that the maintenance of our park systems and trail systems, et cetera, will be an ongoing need. And based on what we are seeing in terms of Bozeman, that the need to generate more community housing, particularly housing that's below market rate, will be an ongoing community need. And so the levy says, according to the ballot language, that the commission each year will decide how much to levy up to a 7 mil cap. Now, mills are roughly right now about 145 to 150,000. So in terms of actual dollars raised, we're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 million per year that could be raised through this. So each year, the commission will say, you know, of our levying ability, if this were to pass, how many of those 7 mils would we like to allocate to community housing?
So, okay. And this is basically independent of any other levies or any other bonds or anything. It's up to 7 mils that are independent. It's not coming out of some pot of mills or anything.
No, it would be its own thing. And that's one of the reasons that we are putting this before the voters, because right now we are not creating a new fund. There is something called the Community Housing Fund, but the way that the commission has been allocating it up till now is out of the general fund. And the general fund is the same fund that funds our police, our fire, library, parks staff, et cetera. It's the most competitive fund that we have. So each year, the commission really is faced with, you know, difficult choices about how to allocate available funding for all of those different things. And over the years, we have allocated a range of 0.5 mils or half a mil, all the way up to, in some years, 5 mils. And those 5 mils are usually been allocated in years where there's unusual revenue sources like ARPA funds or CARES Act funds, et cetera. But each year, we have to try to figure a way of funding what we consider one of the biggest priorities that we have in Bozeman, and that is how do we generate housing stock that our workforce and young families can afford.
So the levy is different from a bond in a number of ways, but one of the differences is that it doesn't have a lifetime. So when we talk about a 7 mil levy versus a $2.2 million bond, it's over 20 years, is that right?
20 or 15, depending upon, yeah.
So what's, I can't remember the estimate for what, if it was a full 7 mils that were levied based on the current tax rolls, how much that would be estimated to cost.
Yeah, and so it would be roughly $1 million a year over the next 10 years. It would cost roughly $10 million. It would raise $10 million. HRDC did an analysis of what that could benefit, and their analysis is that a full 10% of all Bozeman residents would benefit in one way or another from that levy.
Yeah. Are there... I know that the ballot issue doesn't prescribe any particular uses for it. Are there any ideas? So, you know, I hear that number and I look at the problem, and it's certainly acute and in dire need of some attention. But I struggle to think of how much $1 million is going to be able to move the needle in the current environment. So, you know, I'm kind of curious about ways that that money might be, you know, things that it might be used for that can be meaningful contributions.
Yeah, and great question. And that's a question, quite frankly, that we're getting from a lot of folks. And so our education really needs to focus on that. And as I mentioned, we're not creating a new fund. The Community Housing Fund has existed. And so one of the things that you can predict is what has the Community Housing Fund done in the past? And with a larger, more reliable fund, what might be it be able to do in the future? And so one of the primary things that it does is it provides grants for developers, often nonprofit organizations or low-income housing tax credit developers, to be able to subsidize that project to some extent so they can bring that project out of the ground. And we use a but-for analysis. But for that subsidy, would that project come out of the ground? A great example of that is the project behind Lowe's that is going to generate 232 affordable housing units that'll roughly house close to 1,000 people. It also has a low-income medical clinic, community health partners, and it also has Family Promises Daycare Center. That we were able to use the Community Housing Fund to give them a grant of $500,000 to help that project move along more rapidly and get it out of the ground quicker, which cut down on construction inflation, et cetera. Another thing that we were able to do with that fund is HRDC was constructing, you know, one of the other areas that we can impact is this sort of missing middle housing where we don't have condos, townhomes, cottage homes for people who, you know, want to make a go of it here in Bozeman, but there's no inventory that's affordable for them. So by being able to subsidize a project like we did with HRDC's Willow Springs project, 24 townhomes over near the Baxter Post Office, we were able to donate $480,000 or grant them $480,000. They combined that with county funds, federal funds, philanthropic funds, etc., and they were able to pull that project out of the ground and put it into a community land trust, which makes it perpetually affordable for future residents. On the lower end of the spectrum, in terms of housing, we also were able to provide HRDC with $500,000 to renovate and purchase Boulevard Apartments and Darlington Manor Apartments, which were going to be could have gone into market rate housing, but our most vulnerable, disabled, elderly residents tended to live in those two areas. And so that the Bozeman taxpayers helped with the purchase and renovation of those. And then even further down, for folks who don't have housing, there's a program called the Housing First Village, and we were able to pay their impact fees to allow them to get chronically homeless people out into a tiny home, provide wraparound services that starts addressing their needs, whether that's a mental health need or an addiction need, because they're consuming so a larger percentage of our emergency room visits and court dates and so on and so forth. So we can look at the Community Housing Fund and say, what has it been used for in the past? And it's everything from homelessness to first shelter to subsidized rental units to first-time home buyers. And we believe that that is the most effective use of those funds, although we also can use them for a revolving loan fund, and we can essentially say, okay, we can provide a low interest or no interest loan on a particular piece of land if someone comes to us with a project that suits a community need, whether that's veteran housing or whether or not that's low-income housing, et cetera, that can be deployed in that manner.
Okay. I wonder if the fact that if this passes, that there is at least the potential for a little bit more stability, does that allow possibly other organizations that the city partners with to be better able to utilize matching sources of funds or other funds?
Yeah, and so that's a great point, Bob. We have become what's known as an entitlement city. We've grown beyond the $50,000 threshold, which allows us direct allocation of federal funds, but also allows us to compete for community block development grants and some of those other things. And being able to have local funds that leverage other funds is important. And you mentioned, hey, you know, what difference can $1 million make? And that is a great point, because some of the projects that we're seeing are $10, $20, $30 million projects. But oftentimes it's the leveraging of those dollars that show community support that allow us to have the grants that bring those projects about. And oftentimes there's relatively low margins in these projects, and it's this subsidy that makes the difference. We had a panel of people come in during a commission meeting, and people who have actually produced below market rate housing, nonprofits and low-income housing tax credit and New World tax credits, et cetera, and said, what would it take to get more of what you have already done out of the ground? And they said, it's the subsidies. That's the difference that Bozeman has that other communities often don't. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about is people have often said, hey, I've got your solution. Instead of doing a levy, let's tax development. Let's tax second homes. Let's tax luxury homes. Can't we do other forms? And that's the reality is that we as a city, as a result of state regulations, have so few options that we cannot do a construction excise tax. We cannot do real estate transfers fees. Inclusionary zoning, one of our key tools, was just taken out of our quiver by the legislature. We cannot tax different homes at different rates, etc. So some of the solutions that seem obvious are completely unavailable to us. And so we recognize the tax fatigue that all Bozeman residents are facing right now, and that's maybe a bigger question that we can talk about as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, I recognize that too, and I'm kind of worried with the next reappraisal cycle, which I think is next year. I think it's going to hurt a lot, I know that people are struggling already, but I think that when people think about this, they need to draw back and look at the bigger picture. And you know, there's just a lot of different angles to this, and people are probably justifiably freaked out by the rate of growth here, especially people that have been here for a long time and people that came here expecting Bozeman to be this nice little town. And I mean, it's not a little town anymore, and it's certainly moving fast in that, away from that. But I hope that people will think about what it's going to look like if we don't do anything. And I mean, I know a lot of people that are already either doing or talking about leaving because they can't afford to live here. And I don't think that some of the ideas, whether they're legal or not, of, you know, not letting any more people move here. I'm like, well, I don't quite understand how people think that that's even an option. But say it was, I don't think people think about that and understand that some of the people that want to move here have a lot of money and they will move here regardless. Yeah. And pretty soon they will price everybody else out. And so halting things in place is not going to fix our affordable housing problem. It will exacerbate it, I think. I'm not an economist, but it seems pretty apparent to me. So I hope that people will really try to dig in about what not doing anything about this problem means for the community. And I think it's pretty dire if we try to go that route. And so then I think the question is, well, is this a reasonable way? And, you know, I guess that's, hopefully people will do some research. But, you know, I would hope that everybody understands that the need is very acute, and that, you know, and that there is not, you know, there is not a super broad spectrum of different possibilities. Like you said, the number of tools that the city has available at its disposal is pretty limited by state law. And if people really want significant change, they're going to have to contact their legislators and try to do something on that front. But, you know, I just think that people need to take a good hard look at this and think about the need and the consequences of not doing anything. One thing I was wondering about is the question of potentially the city building workforce housing. Has that ever been broached? I'm sure it must have come up as an option or a subject.
Yeah, so the question is, should we be real estate developers ourselves? And one of the things that we have a community housing action plan, and has 75 action items. One of the elements in there is talking to organizations that have land and have a large employee base. How can they use that land, unlock that land to help them with recruiting, help them with retention, and help the community at large? So what we have been doing is talking to the school district, talking to the Bozeman Health, talking to the folks at Gallatin County, and said, can we help you with that analysis? And so Tuesday night's agenda is going to be the area behind Gallatin County Rest Home. They would like to use for county housing, a child care, affordable housing. And that didn't come up by accident. You know, we approached them and we said, how can we have our engineering department look at it, have our community development department look at it, and find out what are the best ways that you might be able to use that land for the benefit of yourself and your community. And we are having productive discussions with the school district about some of the properties that they have that are excess. We're having really productive conversations with the folks at Bozeman Health about some of the parcels that they own. We hope to have more communication with MSU, which has tremendous amount of real estate available and a need to have faculty and staff housing in addition to student housing. So that's just one example of how we, while not being developers, can give them the benefit of the development community by looking at their property and helping them prioritize. And one of the things that you asked was asking people to take a broader view of housing. You know, if you purchased your home many years ago, your view of the housing market is different than folks looking at it today. So your primary concern is the property taxes, and that's a legitimate concern. People who are, like, for instance, the Bozeman Health has 400 vacancies. They're trying to hire, and people are saying, no, I can't afford to live there. And so the unavailability of housing stock at all that you can afford in this market, or the fact that our renters are getting $200 or $300 rent increases per month, et cetera, that we have 0% vacancy and all of the control is in the hand of the landlord, that's creating such an unhealthy market that we're losing our workforce. We're losing our young families, and we're unable to keep our MSU grads in town so that they can afford. So the market that it exists right now, and the percentage of household income that's required to just rent, paying oftentimes in rent what other people are paying in mortgage, is just so different than what, you know, I experienced when I bought my home, last home in 2008. And so we asked folks to take a broader view of that. And I'll give you an example. My wife and I do not have children, therefore we don't have children in the school district. We've lived here for 23 years, and I don't think we voted no on a single request for the school district. And that's probably, if you add them all up together, over $200 million worth of projects. Why on earth would we vote for that when we're going to be paying for that? And we believe that educated kids and having a good educational system in Bozeman is a value that we hold dear. And so we ask people, again, I can't advocate one way or another, but vote on your values and whether or not being able to have our workforce, young families and MSU grads and seniors live in Bozeman is something that is part of your value system.
I think that's a very tactful way to put it. I kind of would maybe a little more bluntly say, do you really think that if you own your own home and you're situated comfortably enough, do you really want to grow all your own food and do all of
serve your own
services
bagels.
Exactly,
pour your own lattes.
That might be what it's coming to. So I hope that people do think about that. I guess one thing I was wondering about the workforce housing was, for city, I understand that there might be more of these legal issues that I don't know about, but there are a fair number of city employees. Would there be any possibility of the city actually building workforce housing itself for its own employees?
Yeah.
Is that a possibility?
It is a possibility. We like to do things in partnership. And so we are looking in concert with the county on the parcel behind their property about how we could use either city childcare for city employees or possibly some housing. But yeah, we have some parcels in mind that will likely be created through annexation in order to get streets through, et cetera, that we will likely have property that we can use for possibly employee housing. And just to show you the nature of that, Josh Waldo was telling me that over half of the people who they have hired on their fire department in the last year actually live not outside Bozeman, but outside the county. That they're actually commuting from other counties in order to get here. So in terms of response time, in terms of wanting our employees to be part of the community in a vital sense, we would love to be able to provide some level of housing to them in a way that makes sense for them. But we will likely do it in partnership with other organizations rather than try to do it ourselves, because we are not builders, and the building community does it better than we will ever do it. But we can provide RFPs or a number of other things and say, here's the outcomes that we would like out of this project.
Right. Well, I think, like I said, I really hope that people think about all of these issues. I mean, in my mind, though, the affordable housing issue is maybe the biggest one I've seen here since I've lived here, and that's been since about 82 or so. And so it's a big deal, and I hope people think about it really hard. I think it's certainly a valid question to say, is this bond or this levy, can it do anything? Can it do enough? And I think maybe asking can it do enough doesn't seem to me like a really that useful a question. It's like, there's not going to be any one enough. It's going to be, I think, a spectrum of things. And is this a piece that can fit into that and actually make some difference? And so I hope people will study the issue and think about that and think about the need and hopefully make good decisions. Like I said, the ballots, as I understand it, they should be, people might have already gotten some of them. If they haven't, they should be dropping in the next day or two. So election day will be on the 2nd of November, so you need to have your ballots. This is a mail-in election.
It is.
You need to have your ballots back by the end of day on the 2nd, and I think the end of day on election day is, 8 p.m., I think.
Yeah, at a certain point, we recommend that folks drop it off in person rather than relying on the Postal Service, which has announced that they're purposely getting slower.
Exactly.
We'd really recommend that once you get beyond the 25th, 26th, that you consider doing it, dropping it off in person at the county courthouse. We also will have a place at City Hall. There'll be other places where we can accept ballots. Yeah.
Right. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming in today and for providing us some information. And we are trying to help people get more information about the election. We've got a couple of three different candidate forums that are they're all on Zoom. So, you know, if you're into watching instead of just listening, you can watch them on Zoom. But we're going to be broadcasting those. There are forums on the 20th and 21st this Wednesday and Thursday at 6:30. There's one the following Thursday at 6 o'clock. And so they'll be about the candidates. I don't know if there's another forum that I've heard of about the ballot issues, but hopefully people are studying up, get informed, vote, and I hope that good things come out of this election.
Yeah, and so, you know, all we can do as city commissioners is try to be judicious about what we put in front of the voters, but it's up to the voters. This is your community. These are your investments. This is your property taxes at work. And the question is, do these align with your values of this community?
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Bob.